Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a subject so immense it really redefines the word scale. We're looking at the fundamental building blocks of the universe's structure, galaxies.
Yeah, and specifically through the lens of John Gribben's fantastic book, Galaxies.
Right, it's a great guide.
It is. And what makes Gribben's book so compelling is that he doesn't just treat galaxies as, you know, pretty collections of stars floating out there.
No, exactly.
His central point is that galaxies are highly dynamic, constantly evolving systems. They're like cosmic engines, really.
That dynamic quality, that's the core insight, isn't it? They aren't just these static points of light. They're where the action is, cosmologically speaking.
Absolutely. Gribben shows that when you study a galaxy, you're effectively studying the entire evolutionary story of the universe. From the Big Bang, the first atoms forming, all the way to today.
It connects you personally to physics, astronomy, cosmology, the whole grand picture. It helps you figure out where we fit in this cosmic web.
Definitely. And you need a good guide for a topic this huge.
Which brings us to John Gribben himself. He's not just someone writing about science. He comes from science.
Right. He absolutely does. He's a trained astrophysicist, got his PhD in radio astronomy from Cambridge. So he's got this, well, deep foundation built over 50 years in the field.
And yet he can communicate it all so clearly. He's written over 100 books, I think, including huge ones like In Search of Schrodinger's Cat. That's quite a combination.
It really is. That mix of rigorous scientific training and brilliant communication is pretty rare. He doesn't just give you facts. He weaves it all into this grand historical narrative.
Ah, so he shows how our understanding evolved, too.
Precisely. How we figured things out. The debates, the breakthroughs. It makes the science feel alive, not just like a list of discoveries. He's both a scientist and a storyteller.
Okay, so let's dive into the book itself. Gribben aims it at, well, curious folks like us, general readers, maybe amateur astronomers.
Yeah, exactly. It's meant to be a comprehensive journey, starting right back at the beginning.
Which is where, exactly.
He starts us off right after the Big Bang in what's called the cosmic dark ages, you know, before any stars had even lit up.
Just hydrogen and helium floating around.
Pretty much. And he shows how gravity slowly pulled these simple atoms together, forming the tiny seeds of the very first primordial galaxies.
And from those humble beginnings, they grew into the huge variety we see today.
Uh-huh. Through mergers, collisions, internal star formation, all leading to the spirals, ellipticals, and irregulars we now classify.
And it's through looking at galaxies that we bump into some of the biggest puzzles in physics, right? Like the missing mass problem.
Exactly. Gribben uses galaxies as the lens for that. He makes it crystal clear that the stars, the gas, the stuff we see, that's just like the tip of the iceberg.
Because there's not nearly enough visible stuff to generate the gravity needed to hold a galaxy together, especially at the edges.
Right. Which leads us straight to dark matter. This invisible stuff that seems to outweigh everything we can see by about 5 to 1. It's the gravitational scaffolding, you could say.
The scaffolding, I like that.
And Gribben also details how another major player has come into focus more recently. Supermassive black holes, or SMBHs.
Ah, yes. The monsters lurking in the middle of most big galaxies. I used to just think of them as cosmic vacuum cleaners just sucking things in.
Yeah, a lot of people do. But Gribben shows they're much more active participants. They have these incredible feedback loops.
Feedback loops? How does that work?
Well, when an SMBH is actively feeding, pulling in gas and dust, it can launch these incredibly powerful jets and winds of energy outwards.
Okay.
And these outflows can actually blow away or heat up the gas clouds throughout the galaxy. This regulates, or sometimes even shuts down, the fuel supply for making new stars.
Wow. So the black hole isn't just passively sitting there, it's actively shaping the entire galaxy's evolution.
In a huge way. It's a fantastic example of how complex systems emerge from these, well, seemingly localized forces.
Okay, let's step back a bit in time. Gribben talks about a pivotal moment, the Great Leap Outward. What was that all about?
Yeah, that takes us back to the 1920s. There was this huge debate, the Great Debate, literally.
Okay.
On one side, you had astronomers like Harlow Shapley, who strongly believed our Milky Way galaxy was the entire universe. Everything we saw was inside it.
So the whole cosmos was basically just our backyard.
Pretty much. But on the other side, people like Heber Kurris argued that those fuzzy patches, the spiral nebulae like Andromeda, were actually completely separate galaxies, island universes, far, far away.
That's a pretty fundamental disagreement about our place in everything. How did they settle it?
The breakthrough came from Edwin Hubble in 1924. He needed a reliable way to measure the distance to these nebulae.
A cosmic yardstick.
Exactly. And he found it in a specific type of star, Cepheid variables. These stars pulse, they brighten and dim, and crucially, the speed of their pulsing is directly linked to their true absolute brightness.
Ah, so if you know how bright it really is, and you measure how dim it looks from Earth,
you can calculate how far away it must be. They're called standard candles.
Clever.
And when Hubble pointed his telescope at the Andromeda Nebula, found Cepheids, and did the math, he proved it was millions of light years away. Definitely not inside the Milky Way.
Wow. That must have been mind-blowing. Suddenly, the universe wasn't just big. It was unimaginably vast.
Yeah.
And we weren't special.
It completely shattered the old view. And naturally, once you realize there are countless other galaxies, you need a way to organize them, right?
Which leads us to Hubble's classification system.
Yep. His famous tuning fork diagram. It's still the basic framework we use.
Okay, so what are the main types?
Well, you've got the spiral galaxies, like our own Milky Way, which Gribbon points out is actually a barred spiral. It has a sort of bar structure through the center. These have rotating disks, beautiful spiral arms.
And lots of gas and dust. Right, where new stars are forming.
Exactly. They're often bluish because of all the young, hot stars. And those spiral arms themselves are fascinating. They're not solid things winding up.
No.
They're actually density waves. Think of it like a slow-moving traffic jam on a highway.
Okay.
Stars and gas clouds drift into the jam. The density wave, they get compressed, which triggers a burst of star formation, and then they move out the other side. The wave pattern itself persists.
Oh, that's really neat. Okay, so spirals. What else?
Then you have the elliptical galaxies. Mm. These are smoother, more like featureless spheroids or stretched out footballs.
And they look different too, right? Redder.
Much redder. They're often called red and dead because right. They're mostly made of older stars and have very little gas left for new star formation. They often form from the messy mergers of spiral galaxies.
Got it. And the last type?
The irregular galaxies. These are kind of the chaotic ones, no clear shape. Often they look messy because they're in the middle of interacting gravitationally with a neighbor, like our own companion galaxies, the Magellanic Clouds. Those interactions can trigger wild bursts of star formation.
So spirals, ellipticals, irregulars. If we zoom back into our Milky Way, Gribbon breaks down its anatomy too, right? The disk, yeah. The bulge, the halo.
Yes, we live in the disk. That's where most of the star formation happens. There's the central bulge, a dense region of mostly older stars. And then surrounding everything is this huge spherical halo.
And the halo is where things get mysterious again.
That's where the mystery deepens, yeah. The halo is vast, much bigger than the visible galaxy. It contains these really ancient clusters of stars called globular clusters, like little stellar retirement homes.
Okay.
But crucially, the halo is thought to contain the vast majority of the galaxy's dark matter. It's the ghost in the machine, so to speak.
Right, the ghost. So if we can't see this dark matter in the halo, how did astronomers even figure out it had to be there? What was the clue?
The big clue came from studying how galaxies rotate their galactic rotation curves.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, based on the gravity from just the stars and gas you can see, basic physics like Newtonian gravity predicts that stars further out from the galactic center should orbit much more slowly, just like Pluto orbits the sun way slower than Mercury does.
Makes sense. Gravity gets weaker with distance.
Exactly. But when astronomers, particularly Vera Rubin in the 1970s, started meticulously measuring the speeds of stars in the outer parts of spiral galaxies, they found something completely unexpected.
What? They weren't slowing down.
They weren't slowing down. Stars way out on the edges were orbiting just as fast, sometimes even faster than stars closer to the center.
Wait, how is that possible? Wouldn't they just fly off into space if they're moving that fast without enough gravity?
Precisely. That's the whole point. To keep those fast-moving outer stars bound to the galaxy, there has to be way more gravitational pull than the visible matter can account for. There must be a huge amount of unseen mass out there, primarily in the halo.
And that unseen mass is dark matter. It's not just a theory. It's required by the observations.
It's an observational necessity. It's invisible, doesn't interact with light, but it makes up something like 85% of all the matter in the universe. And it provides that essential gravitational scaffolding we talked about.
Which brings us back to that fantastic analogy Gribben uses.
Ah, yes, the Christmas tree. He says, the visible stars are merely the bright lights on a Christmas tree. The tree itself is the invisible halo of dark matter.
I love that. It really drives home how essential it is, even though we can't see it. The lights are what we notice, but the underlying structure makes it all possible.
Exactly. And this dark matter scaffolding isn't just holding individual galaxies together. It's structuring the entire universe on the largest scales.
Right. Gribben talks about the cosmic web.
Mm-hmm. When you map out the positions of millions of galaxies, you see they aren't just scattered randomly. They form this incredible network of filaments and dense clusters connected across vast distances, surrounding enormous empty regions called voids.
Like a giant spider web made of galaxies and dark matter.
That's a great way to think about it. And it's the gravity of dark matter that has sculpted this structure over the 13.8 billion years since the Big Bang.
And within this web, galaxies themselves aren't living quiet lives, are they? Gribben emphasizes how dynamic and, well, violent things can be.
Oh, definitely not quiet. Galactic life involves constant interactions, mergers, collisions, even cannibalism, where larger galaxies gravitationally shred and absorb smaller ones.
He uses the antenna galaxies as a prime example, right?
Yeah, that's a stunning case. It's two spiral galaxies caught in the act of merging. The collision has triggered these absolutely enormous bursts of star formation, star bursts, lighting up the system and completely scrambling their original shapes.
It's like cosmic destruction leading to creation.
In a way, yes. And this isn't just happening far away. Gribben reminds us that our own Milky Way is on a collision course.
With Andromeda, our big neighbor.
Yep. In about 4.5 billion years, give or take, the Milky Way and Andromeda will begin a long process of merging.
Yikes. What's that going to look like?
It'll be spectacular, but probably not as destructive as you might think for individual stars. Space is mostly empty, so stars themselves likely won't collide. Our whole solar system will probably just get flung into a different orbit within the new, much larger galaxy that forms, sometimes nicknamed Milkomeda.
Milkomeda? Huh. Okay, so shifting gears a bit, Gribben pulls out some key themes from all this. The first one is thinking of galaxies as cosmic ecosystems.
Right. This is really about systems thinking. He wants us to see that everything within a galaxy is interconnected. Star formation, the life and death of stars, the activity of the central black hole, the distribution of dark matter, it all influences everything else through these complex feedback loops.
So cause and effect aren't simple lines, they're tangled webs. And understanding that helps us understand complex systems elsewhere, maybe even here on Earth.
Exactly. It's a way of thinking that applies far beyond astronomy to economies, biology, climate, anywhere complex interactions govern the outcome.
Okay, the second theme, the unity of physics across scales.
This is about how understanding something as vast as a galaxy actually requires knowledge from all branches of physics. You need quantum mechanics to understand the nuclear fusion powering the stars.
General relativity for the black holes, and the expansion of the universe.
And even particle physics to try and figure out what dark matter actually is. Galaxies are these amazing natural laboratories where we see all the fundamental laws working together. It reinforces how interconnected science really is.
And the third theme, which feels maybe the most profound personally, is cosmic perspective and humility.
Ah, yes. The big picture takeaway. Gribben continually brings us back to the fact that we live on a pretty typical planet.
Orbiting a typical star.
In a fairly typical galaxy among literally hundreds of billions, maybe trillions, of other galaxies in the observable universe.
When you really let that sink in.
It can be incredibly grounding, can't it? It provides perspective. Suddenly, maybe everyday anxieties shrink a little bit, and it really deepens your appreciation for this planet, this moment we have.
Gribben really has a way with words, too. You mentioned the Christmas tree analogy, but there are other really memorable ideas he hammers home.
He does, the idea that galaxies are the atoms of the cosmic web.
Right, emphasizing they're the fundamental units, the building blocks that make up that large-scale structure. They're not isolated, they're connected components.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the one that connects it directly to us. Every atom in your body was forged in the nuclear furnaces of stars.
That's what always gets me. The carbon in our cells, the oxygen we breathe, the iron in our blood. None of that was made in the Big Bang. It had to be cooked up inside stars.
Which then exploded or shed their layers, scattering those heavy elements across the galaxy, eventually forming planets like Earth and ultimately us. We are literally made of recycled star stuff.
It's an incredible connection. And then, of course, the dark matter one. The visible stars are merely the bright lights on a Christmas tree. The tree itself is the invisible halo of dark matter.
It just perfectly captures the hidden reality that most of the universe's structure is unseen.
So, thinking about applying these ideas, Gribbin's whole narrative feels like a lesson in scientific literacy and critical thinking, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Following the story, especially with figures like Vera Rubin challenging the established view on rotation curves based on data, it shows how science actually works. It's not dogma. It's about questioning, observing, testing, revising.
Yeah, you see the process of challenging assumptions, demanding evidence. That's a skill we need everywhere today, not just in science. Evaluating claims, understanding data.
For sure. And connecting back to that cosmic humility theme, there's a powerful application in global perspective and environmental stewardship.
How so?
Well, when you truly grasp the sheer scale of the cosmos, the vast emptiness, and the apparent rarity of planets like Earth, stable, complex, teeming with life, nestled in a relatively safe part of the Milky Way.
It makes you realize how incredibly precious our world is.
Exactly. It kind of dissolves the significance of, you know, lines on a map or political squabbles. It underscores that this is our only known home, this tiny, fragile oasis in an enormous universe.
That's a powerful motivation to take care of it, isn't it?
It really is. A shared perspective from looking outwards. Okay, final thoughts. What's one takeaway that really stuck with you? For me, I think it was the realization that cosmic destruction is often necessary for creation. Like supernovae exploding, galaxies merging, it seems violent, but that's how the heavy elements get spread, how new structures form. It's like chaos is part of the creative process on a cosmic scale.
That's a great point. For me, I think what I love most is how Gribbin manages to take something so inherently intimidating, the scale, the physics, and make it genuinely thrilling.
He does have that knack.
Yeah, he opens this window onto the deepest workings of the universe, showing how all this incredible complexity and, frankly, beauty emerges from relatively simple physical laws playing out over unimaginable stretches of space and time. He makes the vastness accessible, even exciting.
A perfect guide for a cosmic journey.
Couldn't agree more.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.